Mr. Black, reel 14.
What was the name of the camp where you found those bodies?
It was Salto, near Paderborn.
And what date would this be?
It would be probably late April, 1945.
What happened to you after that?
Well, we were placed then under the command of the 220 military government. My duties then were mainly guard duties, prisoner of war camps, hospitals, ammunition dumps, food dumps, and guarding of the river crossings. It's interesting that one such crossing point that an NCO and two of the gunners of C Troop in my battery were on duty when they saw approaching from the direction of Hamburg a German staff car flying a white flag, and they pulled up and asked the NCO where the divisional headquarters were, because they wished to surrender Hamburg. So the NCO, who happened to be my brother, who was a bombardier then, directed them to the 9th Durhams, who were lying right behind us. And they, in turn, escorted this general to the divisional headquarters, where, no doubt, Hamburg was eventually surrendered. By this time, the war was virtually over, and we were given the duty of trying to sort out the DPs, or displaced persons, and that was really a tough job. The whole regiment was engaged on this task, which was unusual because normally we'd be in scattered units, but we're all together for this. And although it was something completely new, we again adapted very quickly. And I found this all through, whatever we were asked to do, we adapted to it. And there was no great panic or anything like that. They just got on with it and did it, and quite successfully on most occasions. We had to process these refugees. First of all, we had to, feed them. And here we engaged the German civil population in helping to provide facilities and manning cookhouses and things like that for to feed them. The big thing was delousing them. They used to pass through the, it was really a shower unit. Their clothes were taken off and they went through the showers and as far as possible given a complete set of clothing at the other end, because they were in a real state. The job was made a lot worse while we're doing this with the presence of drink-crazed Russians that got hold of all sorts of liquor and they looted it and one thing and another. And they went really mad, amongst the German civil population. There was knifing and shooting. Where they got the arms from, I don't know, but they got them. Raping. In fact, two or three times, our lads saved a few of the German Fräuleins from this sort of fate. And they couldn't understand why we did this. They were getting used to the sort of the bad behaviour of the Russians, and the behaviour of our troops, which was good. We never had a case of anyone doing anything out of the ordinary. They had the chance, but they just didn't.
And they must have been petrified of the Russians.
Oh, they were, absolutely. I remember this girl. I think she would probably go mental after what she'd been. We couldn't save her from what had happened because we found her afterwards, and she was demented. I mean, how a human can do that to another one, I don't know. I mean, we were servicemen. I mean, we'd seen everything we needed to see, and it never crossed our minds to behave like that.
I suppose the treatment that the Russians got at the hands of the Germans.
Oh, this was a big factor, of course. I mean, they were treated really horribly by them. You could, up to a point, understand it, but it didn't make our task any easier trying to control them. Shortly after this, we went up to VE Day, which were in a displaced persons camp when it happened, and of course naturally there's great celebrations. Some of my battery got into trouble for the very best of reasons. They took some of their cigarette ration and were throwing it out to the DPs to give them a smoke and that, and of course they didn't want this. That was probably, they shouldn't have done it. They were pulled over the coals for it, but nothing more happened. It was a kindly gesture that went a bit wrong.
So the celebrations would be, in what form did you celebrate the...
Well, I mean, there was no carnival part, no parties or anything like that. I mean, we probably had a drink in the mess, and it was just a happy occasion. The war, as far as we were concerned, in Europe was over, and everybody was light-hearted. As I say, no formal parties. We couldn't organise anything like that. Anyway, shortly after that, shortly after VE Day, the 12th Corps, which had been with for 3 years as the Corps Light Anti-Aircraft Regiment, was disbanded. And the regiment was appointed to the 3rd British Infantry Division. The 3rd British Infantry had been very active during the Northwest Europe campaign. Our CO, Colonel Teacher, then left the regiment, and one of our territorial officers, who had been with us all through the campaign, a chap from Sunderland, Major Dixon, who had been second in command of the regiment right throughout, quite an unusual thing because they moved people on so much, he was eventually given command of the regiment. For a very brief period only, though. We then moved to Trooper Newbung's Platz, which was a former prisoner of war camp. And when we arrived, the camp had been emptied of its former occupants and housed a mixed batch of German POWs and civilian detainees. Amongst them we had some of the... some of the nastiest of the Germans, some of the Gestapo and other part of the establishment of Germany. When we got there, our first task, and it was a terrible one, was to thoroughly clean and disinfect the huts. These were empty huts, not the ones that had the prisoners in. They had cleaned their own huts, but there was a lot of empty huts because it was a terrifically big camp. And in anticipation of more prisoners of war coming, we had to set to and have these cleaned. We used to take a party of the Germans. It doesn't matter what they'd been, it would have been the highest or the lowest, and they were made to get in there and clean them out. Supervised, of course, by our troops. But before we entered the huts, we had in another hut which had been cleaned, we had to strip off all our uniform, right down to zero, put on a pair of overalls which were fastened up tightly and with very tight to the neck and string around the ankles, army socks pulled over the bottom, and then we went into the huts because they were absolutely alive with fleas and other insects. You came out crawling with them.
Had this been a British prisoner of war camp or?
No, it had been Russian prisoners of war. I don't think we would have allowed ourselves to get to that state. It was really bad. We used to come out, take off the overalls, which were bagged and taken away and boiled, cleaned for the next day. However, we eventually managed to get the camp clean and habitable. A very stark reminder in the camp of the atrocities that had occurred within it was the ruins of 3 crematoria. When you saw that and you realised what had got on, and it really brought things home to you. And again, in the case of the people that we found on the wagon with the head stoved in, it was a real reminder of what had got on. And I wish people who nowadays think that things like that were a figment of the imagination could have seen it.
Did you have any problem with the Germans in the camp?
No, they were really, I've got to say it, docile. We had no attempt to escape anything. They were under command, actually the same as the British would have been if they had been prisoners of war, under command of the highest ranking officer in the camp. But the overall Lagerführer, as it was, had been a bank manager in Hamburg, or was a bank manager or head of a bank in Hamburg. And of course, he was sort of part of the German establishment. But really, when you talked to him, you couldn't have talked to a nicer fella. Anything that you wanted to do, you told him, you gave him an order, and that was done. It was carried out. But we had very little bother there at all. We settled down there to a fairly normal routine. There was the roll call in the morning when everyone had a parade outside, a roll call in the evening. And occasionally, and for very obvious reasons, of course, we had a strip search. They never had any notification that was going to happen until they were turned out of the huts. And the drill was to parade them outside the huts, make them take every stitch of clothing off, place it in front of them, and then step two steps to the rear of their gear, which was then searched. And in the meantime, search parties went through the huts and did the necessary. I mean, it looked a bit degrading to see lines and lines. We're talking about thousands of absolutely naked men standing there. But when you thought what these same people who were standing in the nude had done to others, it didn't make it so bad. We rarely found anything that was suspicious. I mean, the worst thing that I came across as going along, and this fellow was furtively shoving something under his foot, and I made him lift his foot, and all it was a photograph of his wife or his sweetheart, I don't know which, a little snap.
Did you have any notorious prisoners amongst them?
I can't remember any really notorious ones. No, I think they were they had already been sort of moved to more secure places. It wasn't a particularly secure camp. I mean, there was barbed wire around it, obviously, but no high walls or no machine gun towers, anything like that. It depended wholly on the perimeter guard. But as I say, it was quite a big place, and nothing sort of untoward happened. At this camp, for the first time in the whole of the campaign, in fact, really for the whole time that would been in the regiment, we had the chance to get decent sergeant's messes, and even a regimental mess. 364 battery, which was my battery, were pretty fortunate in as much as we allocated the accommodation that had been an officer's mess. And it was the accommodation was quite good, and it had the added advantage of having an outdoor swimming pool. So we made good use of that. Those poolside parties in which we, if we're having a little sergeant's mess, do we'd invite other units, sergeant's messes, to come and join us. And it began to feel a little bit more normal. We also, from there, we started the leave to the UK. We got 10 days leave. And on top of that, periodically, we had a 48-hour leave to army welfare sites. They were sited in decent parts of Germany. The only thing was, they supplied the basic facilities. probably a farmhouse or a building, which in which there was cooking facilities and places to eat. But you had to take your own tent, your own bivouac, your own bedding, and everything for to be self-sustaining, more or less, on the 48-hour leave. You had to be. You were in the. You slept in the tents, and it was your own rations were cooked in the facility. There was a facility. This incidentally was for sergeants and warrant officers only. The gunners had another place. And we had it was a decent facility for a sergeant's memory. We had some good times up there because there was a little bit of whiskey available and things like that, a bit of German hooch and wines. So it was quite good, actually. The one we went to, which was very interesting, was sighted on the Mona Dam. And, of course, although the dam had been repaired, I think it was repaired fairly quickly, you could still see how the aircraft had come across for to bomb the dam itself. Quite a pretty part of Germany. Quite enjoyed the times there.
Did fraternisation affect you?
There wasn't any. Well, we were told that you hadn't to fraternise, and as far as I know, there was very little went on. I mean, we had obviously. When we went to these welfare sites, there was German civilians who were acting as waiters and cooks and this sort of thing. They're doing the more or less the servants' task, and you had to be civil to them. I couldn't be any other. I mean, you couldn't avoid them altogether. You were dealing with them, and also when you were dealing with the prisoners of war, you had to be reasonably civil. While we were there, we used to go in the. We used to take a 3-ton and a 1500 weight, and possibly a utility van, and we were free to explore the countryside during the day if we wanted to have a look round. But the nights were spent, as I said, in real good sergeant's mess style. Occasionally, we had other. Well, at most times that we were there, we had. Different units coming up, and at one particular time, when we got there, to our horror, we saw the Red Caps lorries outside, and a whole host of Sergeant Red Caps, including Lady Red Caps. Well, of course, the reaction would be of ordinary soldiers to these, but you know what it is. They did a really good job during the war, and at times we'd been very, very grateful for them because, I mean, while you were doing reconnaissance for gun sights, you hadn't any idea where our own troops were, let alone the Germans. And many a time it's been a Red Cap who has sort of popped out of the side and said, "Here, back, you can't go any further." So we got on extremely well with them. But, while we were at Truppenübungsplatz, we received orders that the 3rd British Infantry Division was due to join SEAC for the invasion of the Japanese homeland. And we were told in no uncertain terms that if this did occur, literally, we'd had as far as casualties were concerned, a reasonable ride through the campaign. We're told that we could anticipate up to 60% casualties, which didn't it didn't increase morale very much, knowing that you are certainly going to face that. But of course, fortunately. For us, not for the Japanese, the bombs were dropped, and that was scrubbed. It came, because I mean, people talk about they shouldn't have dropped these bombs. It saved hundreds of thousands of British and American and Australian, New Zealand, what have you. It saves thousands of lives. you can imagine, I think that the Japanese would literally fought to the last to defend their own homeland. I mean, they were fanatics after all. At this point, when this was scrubbed, the all the numbers up to group 27 for the mob, group 26, sorry, for the mob, were left the regiment, and it was only groups 27 and above. And although I'd been in since before the start of the war, I was still only group 27, so I was due to go wherever they wanted to send us. It turned out that we were to become part of the British Empire Strategic Reserve. In other words, we could have been sent anywhere in the world. As it turned out, we were destined for eventually Egypt, then eventually Palestine. We then received a new commanding officer, Lieutenant Colonel Ed Meads, who was the colonel who's written the foreword in the history of the regiment there. I got a new officer commanding in of my battery, and he happened to be an officer who I knew very, very well. We're on very friendly terms. He'd been OC of or troop commander of B troop, while I was with C troop and then A troop. But B troop had been there's a direction came from headquarters that B troop or one troop had to be taken away from the battery strength, and our CO Major Lee, in his wisdom, decided that Captain Marriott, as he was then, and his troop had to go, and this really hurt Captain Marriott because he was a Sunderland chap. He'd been with the regiment all through, well, as TA and right through, and then also his family. He was related to the Vaux and these people in Sunderland who, had always had ties with the regiment, the Seven Durhams and the Territorials all the way through, and he wasn't a little bit pleased when he was so more or less sacked. Anyhow, we went then into St. Mary Ordenhove, and Major Lee was on leave, due to come back, and Major Marriott, he had been promoted then, came in and said, he says, "Hello, Sergeant Major, I'm your new officer commanding." I said, "Very good, I'm pleased to see you." He says, "Someone's not going to be pleased to see me." So we would work together for 2 or 3 days, and then eventually Major Lee came back from leave. And I wish you could have seen his face when he came in. He says, "Oh, Sergeant Major, who's in my office?" I says, "The new officer commanding, sir." "Oh." So he went in. Before he went in, he says, "Who's that?" I says, "Well, former Captain Marriott, now Major Marriott." If you'd seen his face. What went on in the room afterwards, I don't know, but he came out looking very, very sheepish, and I don't think he said farewell to anyone. He just went. Really, that was the only time that I ever saw any real animosity between officers, really, or between officers and men, but it was there.
Had Lee been trying to displace Marriott?
Well, I don't think they got. I mean, Marriott was a soldier's officer. If there was anything to do, he got stuck into it. If there was a Dannart Coil thing, when you used to do the sort of crossing the Dannart Coils and this sort of thing, whereas the other officers sort of left it to the lads, Marriott would just fling himself on the wire and let them all sort of run across him. He was that type of man. And I don't think Major Lee liked it, because he was essentially an officer commanding. He was all right. I never had any complaints. So let's see, we got organised then. I was appointed as I say, I was then Battery Sergeant Major, which I was quite pleased to serve under Tiny Marriott. And of course, as Battery Sergeant Major of the Senior Regiment, I was also called upon to act as the RSM in the absence of the new RSM that we got. It was an RSM Taylor, who was from the regular forces. As I mentioned, we were stationed in St. Mary Ordenhoven, and I mean, that was that's a village in the Brussels area. And it was the most comfortable billet that we'd had during the war. Had a private room in a house with the Paismans. They treated me really as one of their own. I was really comfortable. They couldn't do enough for me. And that applied to most of the chaps in the battery. The whole of the villagers sort of took them under their wing. Well, I tell you, we were very loath to leave there. But of course, we had to leave because we had received by then orders to travel to the Middle East. We left there and we were concentrated around the Belgium coast at Middelkerk. We left all our equipment apart from personal stuff and went to Brussels Aerodrome to embark on the aircraft. Previous to that, there had been a period of embarkation leave for some of them, but the orders came so quickly that part of the regiment was unlucky and they didn't get any leave. It was made up for them when we eventually got to Palestine.
What date was this?
This was in the October 1945.
And was the battery going to the Middle East or the regiment, or were you coming out of it? 112, you'd left 112.
No, it was still 112 regiment. 112 regiment continued all the way through. Yes, it was early in October 45. We flew out from Brussels in a converted Liberator, and the conversion was taking out everything in the interior and putting canvas bucket seats in, the most uncomfortable things, and we flew there from Brussels to Castel Benito in Tripoli, where we refueled and then flew to Mina Airport beside Cairo. We got a chance to look at the pyramids because the airport was very, very close to the pyramids, actually, and we had a few hours off, and I actually managed to climb a little way up the pyramid, something that's been stopped now. But I can always say I did it.